Today's offering from Norm Nathan's Vault of Silliness is a combined episode from August 26th and 27th of 1995. Highlights are an interview with the author Gene Aspin and calls from Norm's nemesis, Robert from Everett. I always loved how Norm interacted with Robert when he called. He drove Norm crazy, and I found it hilariously entertaining. Deborah in Boston and her If I Won the Lottery dreams. Kevin from Dorchester enjoying some Chinese food. And Norm puts out an APB to solve a mystery. Episode 2 begins in 3, 2, and 1.
Hey, hey, people, pleasure awaits. You're tuned to Norm Nathan, he's one of the greats. Right here on VZ, reaching 38 cents. I'm singing this song so you'll know. It's time for the Nathan Show. When the day-to-day world starts to drive you insane, and you feel like you're riding on a runaway train, Norm makes you laugh and keeps spirits bright. Tune in 10:30 and call Norm tonight. Hey, hey, out there in radio land, you tuned in on Nathan and he's at your command. So stay here and listen, then you'll understand. He's a habit you'll never outgrow. But right now, Norm Nathan's show. I said right now, Norm Nathan's show. Here's Norm.
Yes, hello. Nice to be with you. Nice to be with you. There's a really snappy opening line. Anyway, we will be, I hope, spending a lot of time together over the next few hours. And in just a minute, I want to talk with a woman named Jean Aspin. We've talked with her before. She has a great sense of adventure, and I really admire people like that, even though you'd have to stick a gun in my head before I would ever try to duplicate what it is they do. Jean packed up her family and headed to the Alaskan wilderness. She had done that before and has done a lot of travel like that, living up near the Arctic Circle in Alaska. Anyway, she's got a new book out called Arctic Sun, and the son being her son Luke, a young fella, and I guess she decided it'd be kind of fun to take him and her husband Tom up to where she had spent some time about 20 years before and show him what it's like to live at the Arctic Circle in Alaska for, I don't know, something like a year and a half. Anyway, we'll talk with Jean and some great adventures and a fascinating book in just a couple of minutes. Fulfilling the Dream, which is, is a sequel. I forgot now, Jean, the other book is Arctic Daughter?
That's correct.
Okay, now that was about a trip that you took to Alaska. I say a trip. It's more than a trip. It was a whole adventure that took place at the Brooks Range up in Alaska. About, what, 20 years ago, and then you decided to go back again?
Yes, the first book covers actually 4 years that I spent there living in the wilderness and actually living off the land. This time, we didn't want to live off the land. We wanted to live with the land. So we took most of our supplies with us, and we were not dependent upon just eating meat.
But you really did take supplies. You took chainsaws and all kinds of things so you could build a home for yourself there in the wilderness.
Yeah, at my age, I'm not as good with an axe as I used to be.
Well, you say at your age, you're what? You were in your 40s when you did this?
Yeah, I was 43. He's 47.
And your son Luke was, how old was he?
He was 6.
Okay, and the idea of the idea was to to instill a sense of adventure, to show him what you had been through before?
Yes. Well, my parents were Arctic explorers, which is why the name of my first book was Arctic Daughter. And so for me, it was a passing on of the dream and a passing on of the legacy of living with the land. And having Luke there, I think, was a big part of it. Also, I really had missed that kind of life, and I wanted very much to share it with my husband.
Your home generally, though, is in Arizona. Is it around Tucson?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, near Tucson, Arizona, where the weather is, I would guess, quite different.
It's pretty hot here right now, 100 degrees.
Is it really?
Yeah, you might even hear the cooler going in the background.
Okay. And in the Arctic Circle where you were, up at the Brooks Range, temperatures got as low as, what, 60 below, something like that?
Yeah, I think 65 below was as low as we saw it.
What? Now, for those of us who are never going to face winters like that, what is it like at 60 below? Somebody would tell me when it gets real cold, you can almost hear the silence in the air.
You know, that's a good way of putting it. To me, the silence in the wilderness is almost a spiritual experience in the winter. It is so intense. It's like you can hear forever, especially at very cold temperatures.
Now, you and your husband, Tom, I'm just reading about the raft and chopping down trees and floating them down the river and stuff to where you wanted to build a home, but you actually did. To me, that seems like an impossible task. Had Tom ever built a house before?
Well, he built the house that we live in now in Arizona. We built it together. But, of course, it's very different. It's block construction, and you know, you go down to your local Payless and buy the materials instead of going out and gathering them up.
Yeah, now, what is that like when you, for example, if you could just describe what it was like knocking down trees and carting them off to where you were building the house?
It was very intense, hard work, but it was also... having worked as a self-employed business person, I'm an artist for many years, it was very exhilarating to be working outside, physically accomplishing something that you could actually see. It's much different than paperwork. Every day you can see that you've done a little bit. The cabin is growing, and there's a sense of exhilaration. There's also, because you've committed yourself, and winter comes very, very quickly. We had 72 days that we used to get the cabin up. And then, you know, the snow comes and it gets cold and gets dark. So we didn't have a lot of time.
No, I know that. I would think that a sense of, although you don't describe, a sense of panic is setting in as the days were getting shorter and the days were getting colder, and you had to finish the house. And you had also had another building where you kept supplies, that is, meat and all of that.
No, we wanted to, but what we did is we built another room on the cabin, so it was all connected. We were building it all at one time.
And part of the meat that you collected was moose, right? That you shot.
Right.
You paint such a poignant picture of shooting moose. It like you needed that for sustenance through the cold winter months up in the Arctic Circle in Alaska, but it wasn't a pleasure for you to take your rifle and shoot animals.
I must admit that through the years, I'm becoming more and more, I wish to approach the land with gentleness and to not affect the land around me. And I respect and love the animals, and it's difficult for me to shoot them, and yet I can do that, and I have done it before.
Now, tell us about how you got up to where this remote area, because... Alaska doesn't have a super highway that's going all the way up into the Arctic Circle and all. So most of it, you can go so far by motor vehicle, and then you have to fly and all that. I mean, tell us how you got there.
The logistics in Alaska are always mind-boggling. Alaska, you have to realize, is if you cut it in half, would make two states both larger than Texas with a very small population. So there's no... I was reading the other day, the eighth largest city in Alaska has 3,000 people in it.
And which city is that?
It's out on the Aleutian chain, and I don't remember the name of it.
Okay.
I haven't been there. But,
okay.
The second largest city in Alaska is Fairbanks with 30,000 people. So that gives you an idea.
Okay. Is that the capital?
No, Juneau is the capital. Going back to... The logistics. Tom drove all of our stuff to Fairbanks. It was 6,000 pounds with his little truck. And from there, we drove on the one road that goes north to Prudhoe Bay to the oil fields. And partway along the road, we stopped at a little lake, and it had a plane fly in from one of the villages that has no roads to it. And the plane picked us up and made four shuttles into the mountains and landed on the river on floats.
Now you paint a picture that must have been very tense for Tom, because he not only had this truck, with the supplies, but a trailer that he was pulling along to?
Yes, and the trailer, he just had a tarp over the top with all our stuff in it, and just the thought of, we did this on a shoestring. We didn't have any money, and we had to mortgage everything we owned to do it. Nothing was insured. You know, this was the hardest part, I think, of the whole thing, was getting in.
And so you had this tremendous load, because you did take a lot of stuff along with you. Did you take, for example, you had a stove and all kinds of things in the house you built.
Right.
So you had to bring all of that with you.
Yes. I had my list, by the way. I'm a great list maker. I had my list from 20 years before, and that helped me considerably. And I went about it in a very logical way, calculating our food needs. And, you know, you eat 2 pounds of dried food per person per day if you're going to have a pretty substantial calorie intake. And so that adds up to a great deal of weight over a period of time. We took 3,200 pounds in dried foods with us.
Now, it was interesting to see how you calculated that, how much food you would need for three people. Actually, more people, because you had Lori, who flew in later on, was the nanny, right, for Luke.
Yeah, she was a friend, daughter of a friend of ours, and we didn't know her very well, and it worked out wonderfully well. She had never even car camped before. And so this was a real big adventure for her.
I would think so. Now, here you're talking about going to this remote area of Alaska, and she sounded like she was really excited about it from the very beginning, as something that she had never, from the way you're talking, never come close to doing before.
Yes.
Now, there's a person with a great sense of adventure. I know you have that. Had Tom done anything like this before, your husband?
Well, we started off kind of slowly. We visited my father, who still lives in the Arctic, when our son was 18 months old, and spent a summer with him in the Brooks Range. He has an established home there. And so Tom discovered that the Brooks Range was a place he really wanted to be in. Then when Luke was 4, my sister and I and Tom and Luke canoed about 400 miles to the Brooks Range. And at that point, we made the commitment that we wanted to spend a year there.
Now, you mentioned Laurie, because Laurie joined you later, and you had flown in, and then Laurie flew in and all of that.
Laurie came in with Tom. It was Luke and I who went in first.
Oh, I see.
And
okay.
The two of us were alone for about a week.
I see. Okay.
And that was it. You know, we were there then.
And then later on, a friend of Laurie's, I found this kind of interesting. Was his name John? He came in to see Laurie?
Yes. He, and again, it was a peculiar circumstance. He had only met her a few days before she came in, and he tracked her down and contacted friends of ours and actually flew in and spent 2 weeks with us.
Okay, now here's a sudden guest coming in, and you've got the food calculated to take care of the numbers of people you already had, so this was an extra person, which could throw you off. The thing that I found kind of interesting is you mentioned that Tom was not too happy about John coming in, and you mentioned also that, I think, see if I've got this right, at one point you're thinking maybe it would be easier for you to have been alone rather than face maybe some negative comments by Tom or something. Am I anywhere close to what you were thinking at that time?
I'm not sure I understand what you're saying.
I think when you have to account to somebody, it makes life a little more complicated, and I thought you had suggested in the book that maybe if you were just alone doing this kind of thing, then you would not be accountable to anybody, and it would be easier than explaining to Tom how it's okay for John to be there.
Well, I think one of the things that it was hard for me and one of the things of value about my book is I'm very candid about our relationships with one another, about my relationship with Tom and the way Lori fit in and the way Luke grew. And I really want to acknowledge both, Tom, Lori, and Luke for being willing to write my sense of who they are and what our experiences were together, because I am very candid about it. I feel that as an artist, if you don't express what's really going on for you, that you're cheating people, because they have real lives of their own, and if they have trauma and they have a hard time getting along with other people, and if you're not honest with them, then you don't have anything to offer them.
Now, Luke, you were there, did you say about a year and a half on this trip?
Yes. two summers and a winter, which isn't quite a year and a half. It's 14 months.
Okay, well, now you left. What was the month that you landed there?
We went in June, and then we it took us, in order to get out, we had to travel 600 miles by canoe down to the Yukon River Bridge, which, incidentally, we just made that trip this summer again.
Oh, really?
Tom and Luke and I, and another young woman who we don't know very well went with us, and she also had not been in the wilderness and got a lot out of it. So it was fun sharing it with somebody new.
Do you feel kind of restless being back in Arizona in warm weather and away from Alaska and a place you spent so much time? Are you planning to go back again?
Tom wants to go back right away.
Really?
I would like to see other parts of the world, and I think Luke and I are lobbying maybe to do some hitchhiking or bicycling around Hawaii next summer.
What about the house that you built? Is that still there?
Oh, yes. I'm in it right now.
No, I don't mean the one in Arizona.
Oh,
I mean the one in Alaska that you built.
Oh, yes. I knew this would happen, but the grizzly bears had been into it quite meticulously. They're very strong and intelligent and meticulous workers, and they have a strong opinion about people's houses, and they do their very best to not only get the food out of them, but every window was carefully broken out, and everything inside was picked up and thrown out the windows and scattered for acres around. It took us several days to clean it all up.
You would talk, that's kind of, okay, so far as you know, the house is there intact?
Oh, I was just there this summer. Uh-huh.
Oh, when you went on this this other trip, you did that again. In the book, it's kind of interesting. You were talking about somebody who was hunting, who picked up a hunting license in one of the cities in that general area, and you were talking about some other rules to follow. I'm trying to think if I can remember what they were. What surprised me was, here you are in the wilderness with nobody around. Was it necessary for you to have a fishing license and all that? I mean, who was to check on you?
There wouldn't be anyone to check on us, but we tried as much as possible to maintain our integrity with the state of Alaska. Also, we were filming a documentary, which it looks like it's very possible that it's going to be produced by WNET on PBS. And, in fact, we're waiting to hear from them this week on that, whether they've got the funding or not. So, you know, we were living a very public as well as a very private life.
Yeah, that's interesting, because, of course, the house you built was on land that you did not own. Did that bother you at all?
Well, the fact that I guess I feel almost that no one can ever really own anything, that we don't even own our bodies for more than a few years, and it's interesting to build a place, because if you live in it long enough, you begin to see that all the termites and storms and other things begin to take it back. So everything is temporary.
It's kind of interesting. Your philosophy seems to me to be like Native Americans.
Yeah.
Where they feel that nobody can own the land, and when the white man came along and said, "No, you know, we have the land. You sold it to us." That was incredible to them. They couldn't imagine. You don't sell land. That doesn't belong to anybody. Nobody has a right to sell land.
I actually think part of our problem with the earth today is that we have taken this idea of ownership so strongly that we think nothing of eradicating another species because we want to put in a parking lot or whatever.
Yeah,
it's peculiar when you look at it in a long term. It's actually suicidal.
Let's take a little break for a couple of commercials,
sure.
And we'll be right back. And people would like to talk to Shiloh.
Shiloh, that's right.
Yeah, I missed that part. Last time I looked at the book, he was missing. Did you ever find him?
No, she ran off probably with the wolves. She was very wild, and as the spring came on and it became easier to move around and warmer outside, it became more and more difficult to catch her. And I really don't want to keep an animal chained in my life, and eventually she disappeared.
And a dog can survive in that area?
No, I'm sure she did not survive. Survival is hard enough for the native wildlife that have been adapted and trained for it for millions of years.
Yeah, that must have been tough on your son Luke, who I know who felt badly about her being missing, and
yes,
was hoping
was
she'd
tough.
Come back.
It was tough.
Yeah. How do you think this trip had changed him?
You know, I think it's been very, very positive. I wanted to tell you that he has actually spent five summers. He's nine. He spent five summers in the wilderness in the Arctic. So that's a pretty significant part of his life, and I think he feels a very deep connection with the land. I think it's made him a lot more resourceful. He is very trustworthy. He can handle a gun. He has his own knife. He can set light fires. He's a hard worker. He's a good reader. So I think that there's a lot of skills that have been brought forth in him in being able to be in the Arctic life itself, in the wilderness.
Now, what about his relationship with friends now? Because they don't have anywhere near the experience, and he has done so much. Is it tough for him to make friends with the people who really are kind of boring, who've led a boring life compared to the kind of life he's been leading?
Well, he enjoys a lot of things that his friends do. He has a computer, and he doesn't have any video games. He loves their video games, and he loves to play with them, swimming, and so they have a lot of things in common. Just being 9 years old, I think you find a lot of things in common with other kids.
Okay, let's take some calls. Bill in someplace in his car. Hi, Bill. You're on WBZ. Can you hear me, Bill? I think we may.
Hey, Norm?
Yes, hi, Bill.
How are you doing? I think you're a wonderful host, and I listen to you all the time when I go down to North Carolina.
Well, I appreciate that. Where are you now?
I'm on the turnpike on my way home from work.
Oh, you're in the Boston area.
Actually, no, Framingham. But anyhow, a few little comments on your guest. I think it's wonderful. I think I admire her. In some way, I'm somewhat jealous that... that someone can just pack up and lead a life that she leads. Unfortunately, we all can't do that. And why we have ownership is to keep the lawless from taking that which rightfully belongs to those that are in possession of it. And if we didn't have that, then we wouldn't have a society. So, but I think it's wonderful the experience that she experiences, and we can live through her eyes and appreciate what she experiences, and I appreciate it.
Aside from the fact that you say that she's lucky she can do this and many of us can't, I mean, she can do this because she wanted to do this. Would you, even if you could do it, would you want to live that kind of life?
Oh, sure. I'd like to be able to get off the treadmill.
And move to Alaska and live in the wilderness through a couple of winters or a couple of summers and a winter where the temperatures are 60 below zero and you're up to your armpits in snow and all that?
I think everybody should experience something like that. I think it would be good for the soul and good for the mind, and I think it would be, sort of get back to yourself. People go go on retreat to try to get back to, to a good relationship with their spouse and their family and everything. And I think we're so wrapped up with this fast life that we need probably to stand back and maybe get into something like that. I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Okay. I think he wanted to get rid of me when you start asking. People always say that. Well, you know, I can't get away for that length of time. You know, they could get away for that length of time. You know they wouldn't do it. The kind of stuff that you've been doing is so unusual. Most people just would not even know where to begin.
I think I was fortunate in that I had a mother who started with me very early. And in fact, my mother took my sister and I to the Arctic Ocean by canoe through Canada when I was only 14 and my sister was 12. We traveled 3,000 miles. And incidentally, my mother grew up in a good deal of poverty. We didn't have much at all. We lived in a little tiny it didn't even have a bedroom, little place. And so in order to do this, she managed to get a publisher to front her some money. And for us, I think the scariest part of this whole trip was not the Arctic, which I find to be a very easy place to be in many respects, but in the fact that we had a business that we had built up for 10 years that we had to sell, and we mortgaged our home, and we put ourselves way out on a limb. I sold my car. And basically converted everything that we could to cash in order to do this because we felt that if we didn't do it now, we wouldn't be able to do it as we got older.
Yeah, but of course, then you had already done it before.
That helped a great deal.
Yeah, it would help a great deal. So you could have said, hey, I've already done this. I don't have to do it again. But there's something, I just wonder what makes somebody like you tick and do things that most of us, we would never get close to doing it. You're really very special, and you make me feel inferior, Gene. I just knock it off.
No. Actually, my message to people is, in my book, that each of us can live our dreams, that that taking risks is a valuable and necessary part of our lives, and that it doesn't get easier because you don't know what the outcome is going to be, but that it's worthwhile.
Yeah, and your knowledge of the outdoors is so great, having been through this, and again, earlier with your folks, aside from the other trip a few years ago. For example, you talk about bears.
Yeah, my husband got chased by one this summer.
Oh, this past summer?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he had a foot race with one. He won.
Oh, tell me, what happened there?
Well, he was down at we were camped coming down the river. It takes about over a month to come down from our cabin to a road. And so we were in camp, and he was out checking the bottom of the canoe for bashes because we'd been going through some bad rapids. And he heard the sound of rushing water, and he looked up, and here's a grizzly about 80 feet away coming. And he said the thing that impressed him so much about it was the bear looked so happy. He didn't look fierce or snarling. He looked delighted, like he would look if you hooked a 17-inch fish. And he thought, I can make it to the rifle. So he leaped over the canoe and came into camp fast, saying, there's a bear. And I thought he meant he wanted me to go look at a bear. And I got up, and I realized the bear was coming right through camp. And I reached over, and I started whacking on a pot, and the bear veered off and went down into the bushes. And I think an awful lot of times they don't see very well. And the bear probably thought Tom was another bear. But grizzlies are hunters, and they will kill other bears. And I wanted to alert the bear that it wasn't just another bear, it was people.
Okay, because you did kill a bear that was a little more treacherous.
Yeah, we did have to kill one.
Yeah, you did have to kill this one. And skinned it, and you cooked it, you had the bear meat and stuff?
Yeah, we ate it. I feel it's disrespectful to kill an animal and not eat it if you can help it.
Yeah, so you don't just kill for the sake of killing, I understand. But you know about, like, hibernation. You were telling your son, and you were quoting yourself as telling Luke, for example, that he doesn't have to worry about bears during certain times of the year because they're hibernating.
Mm-hmm.
So you know when that happened. I mean, you have a lovely knowledge of the outdoors, which you've gotten through the years, and which your husband would have had. Was this the first time he had done something like that?
Yeah, it was. And it's amazing how well he fit in and how much he enjoyed it.
Well, he had a great deal of faith in you because he could say, what are you, some kind of a nutcase? I mean, he was in his 50s by that point, or late 40s?
Yeah, pretty close.
He was close to that, and you were 40. See, I'm a lot older than either one of you, so your ages don't scare me at all. But nonetheless, he could have easily said, you know, what do you want to screw around like this for? This doesn't make any sense. Luke, when you went up there, because you had no television, what I'm saying is pretty obvious. So Luke's life was so different than any other young kid his age. Did that affect him in any way? I don't think you're making a reference to the book, them saying, my favorite television program is on and we can't even listen, we can't even watch it or anything. He didn't complain about that.
You know, I think I've often told people, I've often told people that you should start with them young. The first time Luke camped out, he was only 6 weeks old. And I think the quicker they get used to this as being part of life, the less likely they are to complain about bugs or lack of TV. It's just an accepted thing. I remember when we canoed for several hundred miles to the Brooks Range, and Luke was four, he would take his naps curled up between my knees in the canoe. And he just accepted that that was the way it was done. Didn't think about it.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And you were mentioning bugs, because when we think of Alaska, we think, darn, it's not bugs, it's all ice.
Tremendous bugs.
Yeah, I know, tremendous bugs, right. And for a while, you were living in a tent kind of setup while you were building the house. And so the bugs must have been fierce.
Yeah, it's one of the things that keeps people out of the Arctic. I have to admit it. It's one of the reasons I really prefer winter over summer. You get bit 200 or 300 times a day. That's just the way it is, even with mosquito repellent and protective clothing, when the bugs are bad. Okay. But they're not bad all summer. They're mostly bad in June. By July, they're maybe half of what they were in June, and by August, they're down to about a tenth of that. So they do disperse before the really cold weather hits.
How much warm weather is there? Now, you said you went up in June, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, it was still relatively warm. How warm does it get, and how long does the summers before that ugly winter sets in?
The ice goes out around May 15th up where we are. And it freezes up about the 15th of September. So that gives you the kind of the window in the middle. And obviously it's getting cold before it freezes up, and it's not really summer when the ice burst goes out, but that kind of gives you the idea.
Okay, so there isn't a whole lot of whoopee-doo warm.
But in the middle of summer, by, say July, you get days it might be in the 90s. It can be quite hot.
That must be, you know, I don't know quite how to describe it, but suddenly you're in the Arctic, and suddenly the temperature warms up to 90.
It's a land of great variety. In the winter, you have 2 months where the sun doesn't come up at all, and it's 60 below zero. And then in the summertime, the sun never sets, and you are more apt to be active at night than in the daytime, often.
What is that? What is the name of the city just on the other side of the Brooks Range, the northernmost city in that area?
You mean Prudhoe Bay?
Not Prudhoe Bay.
Barrow?
Yeah, Barrow. And I remember we made a call up there. They don't call it the police. They call it the, I don't know, it is the police, but it's some other name.
Mm-hmm.
But we called the headquarters one time, I guess, during the...
State troopers, maybe?
Not even state troopers. Isn't that awful? I'm terrible at trying to remember. But there was a woman that we talked to. In fact, we talked to her a couple of times. She was from California, of course, you're from Arizona, warm climate, too.
Mm-hmm.
And she had gone up to that area and was working in for the police. And one of the things she mentioned, I remember, was in the summertime, when there's sun, daylight 24 hours a day, you see the sun, it doesn't rise or set, of course. It just kind of whirls around in there in the sky. So you have, obviously, you've hit that. And the times, now, which is worse? Is it worse being dark 24 hours a day or light 24 hours a day?
I love the way you put worse. It's wonderful to have so much variety in life. I really enjoy that change. It's different. It's such a different world at the different seasons. It's almost like you have two totally different lands to live in. In the summer, things are growing very fast. The birds are active all the time. You never get out of the sound of running water, calling birds, and mosquitoes, of course. And in the winter, it's totally silent. It's just so different. I get tired of total darkness, living in a little cabin when it's 60 below zero and you can't go very far. And incidentally, it's never totally dark because you always have a twilight for two or three, 4 hours during the middle of the day. The sun just doesn't come up.
Would that be true then a little further north?
If you go far enough north, you will get to the point where you don't even get much twilight.
Yeah, because this woman was saying she would rather have darkness 24 hours a day than light.
Interesting.
Summertime. Yeah, gee, I don't know why that was.
I feel much more comfortable in the light because you're not as vulnerable. You can go out and get things if you want to. You're not the. I think in the middle of winter you're sort of stuck with whatever preparations you made early on. If you have enough wood, if you have enough to eat.
When
it's very cold, you're very vulnerable. You can't go very far.
Well, then yeah. I wondered how you sleep when the sun is out most of the day.
If you work hard enough, you sleep.
you guys certainly worked hard enough. Your book, anyway, is fascinating, and it's published by...
Menasha Ridge.
Menasha Ridge, okay.
And there will be a paperback coming out by Dell Laurel Expedition Series around Christmas or a little later.
It's really nice that guys like you have got guts enough to take and go on adventure trips like that so that guys like me who don't have any guts at all get a chance to live vicariously through your books, which are just so much fun to read. You're a pretty lady, by the way, just looking at your picture on the desk cover.
Well, thank you.
And you've got such a gentle voice. You don't look like the kind who braves her way through wildernesses, chops down trees, and builds homes out there. But I mean, that's a stereotype I just painted of you, and I apologize for that.
You know, I was thinking what you said about yourself. I think that each of us has our own niche and our own courage in our own way. It doesn't have to be, my risk doesn't have to look like your risk. We each of us can live our dreams and take our own kind of risks. It doesn't have to look like living in the wilderness, and it shouldn't for everybody.
That's right, too, because I've got a lot of guts myself, too, Gene. You hear me?
I bet you do.
In a different way. No, I made that up. I'm not sure
about
it.
No, a lot of people would think talking on the radio to people every night, it would take a great deal of guts.
Not as much as building a home and having bears come visiting you up in the Arctic wilderness. That is, I have to admit, much as I'd like to think I live a very heroic, brave life, it doesn't come anywhere near matching what you guys have done, and I really respect you a lot for that. Gene Aspen, A-S-P-E-N, like the town in Colorado. Arctic Sun, Fulfilling the Dream. Book is available most places, do you think, or do you have a 1-800 number?
You know, I do have a 1-800 number, and also people could always ask their bookstore to order it for them. Just a second, and I'll give it to you.
Incidentally, the descriptions you have of the land and all of that, It's so beautifully written. It's just fun. Just reading the book, and you feel like you're there.
Thank you.
Without imperiling your life.
I love the land. I love the land.
No,
and I think that probably shows.
Yeah, it does show. It shows very, very, very clearly.
Here's the 1-800 number. It's 1-800-247-9437.
Okay, 1-800-247-9437. And, Gene, what is the next adventure you're going to be on?
I don't know if I can talk Tom into it. I'd like to spend 3 months next year bicycling around Hawaii and seeing all the different islands. And I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do, but Tom would want very much to go back, and Luke does too, for another year and a half in the Arctic. Right now I'm in school studying nursing, and so that is my direction at the moment.
Okay, and you have that film you think may be coming out on public television?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, we'll be looking for that. Gene Aspen, thank you very, very much for being back on the air with us. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
If we ask...
Here's Norm Nathan. He's my kind of man. I listen to Norm Nathan every time I can. On WBZ in Boston, the Norm Nathan Show.
Runs these, has been so terribly busy over the past year or two, you know, on leading people on tours and all that kind of thing. But we do have another one, and I'm so pleased about that. It all benefits Children's Hospital, you know, the farm stand. All kinds of food and family fun. And you can get breakfast there because we opened very early in the morning, 7 a.m. Lunch, snacks, fresh vegetables, plants. So these are things you can buy to take home. Arts and crafts things. There's a petting zoo, flea market. Well, those of you who've been to a farm stand in the past, I mean, know the great deal of fun that is involved. And this is going to be Saturday, September 16th. Not too many Saturdays away. September 16th from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. And rather than have it up in, was it Wilmington that we had it in the past? It will be right across the Soldiers Field Road from the WBZ studios. I didn't realize it was called Artisani Park. But that's what it's called. Right across from Soldiers Field Road. 1171 Soldiers Field Road. Right on the banks of the majestic, fast-flowing Charles River. It's beautiful country. And if you can make it, boy, it would be really lovely to have you. So the date is, again, is September 16th. I just mentioned that. You've got a few weeks to think about it. But do jot it down and make plans to attend. A lot of the BZ people will be there. I don't know whether that's any advantage to you or not, but they will be there to see who's there and to say hello, and that might be kind of fun, too. Thank you just so much. One other point, on Sunday night at 11, Bob Hernandez will be with us. He's the man behind so many games, including Geographics and Times of the World, Pastimes, mostly geography games and history games and that kind of stuff. Significa is the new game that he'll be talking about. It's a combination of history and geography, and he's always fun. And we'll be giving away games also. So that's this coming night, Sunday night, 5 after 11, a couple hours with Bob Hernandez. And if you can join us for that, that would be just so darn nice. Uh-oh, this is Robert from Everett, and you know what that does to my digestive system.
How you doing, buddy?
Okay.
I'd love to come to that thing on 16th, is it?
Yes, it is. What?
Will you be there?
Yeah, I'll be here.
You mean my best friend? I could meet him in person?
Would you be coming, or are you just saying that?
No, I'm planning on a trip now. 1 minute now. Give me a break now. I mean, I would be able to meet, like, Tony Nesbitt? And
Tony,
Hulk,
I think, I guess so. I guess a lot of them
and
will.
Bob
I don't
Raleigh?
Know. I would think, yeah, he usually shows up.
Usually shows up. I called you because I want to make a trip to Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, and New Brunswick.
Well, you call me because you need my permission?
No. I want to find out, am I doing the right thing? What's the ferry? Do I drive from Boston here, we'll say Everett, to Portland? Do I get a ferry?
At Portland, Maine, to Nova Scotia? I believe so.
And does that take you like 24 hours? It takes you all the way over there?
I don't know. I've never been to Nova Scotia. I've never taken the ferry, so I really can't tell you.
I've never been there. That's what I'm asking.
I don't know. I really don't know, but you can certainly make a few phone calls to...
I've got AAA helping me.
Well, they would know exactly how long it would take. Why would you ask me?
Well, I ask them. You know, you know, you've been all through all these areas and everything. England.
Never been to
Maine,
never
and everywhere.
Yeah, but never been to Nova Scotia. Never took the ferry.
Is it a good trip?
I just told you I've never taken it. I don't know.
You're not even helping me.
Ask people. See, when you want to find out something, ask the authorities, and certainly AAA would be able to tell you.
They're sending me a map, how to go, what hotels...
There you go. You got all the information, so why bother with me?
I didn't get it yet. I thought maybe you would give me better information. Save me
no,
a buck.
No, I can't give you better information than
the
AAA.
Save me a buck?
What?
Senior citizen? I'm going with my family.
What has senior citizen got to do with that?
Well, you get a little bit off, don't you?
Why are you asking me? Why don't you just ask the AAA or people who really know? You get definite answers.
Okay, do I take from here, do I go to Portland?
You're not going to stop, are you? I don't know where you go. I just don't know. I've never been on that trip. I'd say you go here, you go to Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, take a balloon ride over southern Canada, and then stand by as I fire an arrow into the balloon. I don't know about these things. Why are you asking me?
I understand.
I told you about 5 times I've never taken that trip, so why do you keep asking? Is there any special reason? It's because you have nothing else to talk about.
No. I've got a million things to talk about.
All right, let's start.
Yeah, here, I want to go there. I heard it's so beautiful. The English, Irish, Scottish up there. Do they have, like, pubs up there?
They have lots of pubs up there, yeah. And I'd say you pick up a ferry. If you really want to know, pick my brains. I say you pick up a ferry in Portland, and it takes you 17 days to Nova Scotia. I'm making
now
up stories.
Now you're sending me all the way to somewhere like Australia.
That's right. That's what I'm hoping for.
You're doing that, huh?
Yeah.
Why?
Because
you're my best friend.
No, I'm not your best friend. I can't even stand you.
Don't do that to me.
Yeah. But you're going to ask me again how long the trip is and the whole business. After I've already told you, I have no idea. I've never taken that trip. Why do you do that?
Well, maybe somebody like... Your partner there. Is Tony there? Maybe he's been on the trip.
Tony doesn't want to talk to you. He can't stand you. He's holding his nose at this moment.
Tony's a nice guy.
No, Tony is not. Tony's not here. No, somebody said 11 hours. Takes 11 hours to get
11
up
there. 11 hours. That's all I want to know. Okay, 11 hours from Portland to Canada.
Nova Scotia, yes.
Nova Scotia.
That's what I'm told. I don't know. See, that's
okay,
what somebody
said.
Okay,
that's what I want. I don't have to go anywhere near New Brunswick.
Not unless you want to.
No, I'm not against New Brunswick. From Nova Scotia, do I go to Prince Edward Island? Do I get another ferry?
Yes, you do. You go to Prince Edward Island, you go to Newfoundland.
No, I don't been in Newfoundland.
No,
I don't want to go to Newfoundland.
No, you have to go to Newfoundland.
It's cold up there.
Then you have to go to Ireland and Scotland.
No. I want to make that trip with you and me.
Oh, what a nightmare that would be to be trapped on a boat with you. Oh, God.
Yeah, but Ireland...
Help me. Help me.
Could you imagine, Norman, you and I doing our double, two boys with lame brains? singing and telling those funny jokes you tell.
Could I hang up on you, Robert? Would that be awful?
No, I just wanted to talk. Thank you very kindly.
Okay, good. I wanted to catch him right in the middle of a word. Okay, let's go to Deborah in Boston. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Norm. How you doing?
I'm doing probably better now that I'm talking to you, but I never do well when I'm talking to him.
I guess not. When you gave the lottery figures a while ago, I was just curious what you would do if you won the lottery. Have you ever thought about that?
Yes, I have thought about this. I mentioned this one time. Like, say you win... Well, right now, the next jackpot would be worth about $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
But assuming you're thinking, like, what if you make $5 million or $10 million or something like that?
Sure, yeah.
Like on the Powerball, see what the Powerball figure is, because that's usually tremendous.
I know.
I'm looking right now and looking it up because you're such a cute-sounding person. The estimated jackpot on the Powerball is $31 million.
Oh.
What I think, Sina, I mentioned this, the fact that I would hope that I would never win, because I have a feeling I would turn really ugly.
Really?
Yeah, I think, I don't mean physically ugly, because I've already turned that. but I mean, I don't know whether I'd... See, I'm a very sweet-tempered, nice person, but if I had all that much money, I might lord it over people and become really nasty.
Oh, really obnoxious?
I think so. Like, hey, I got $31 million. What are you, fella? What about you? What would you do with that?
Oh, I know exactly what I would do.
Really?
Yep.
What?
Well, for the first thing I would do is hire somebody to manage the money, and I would pay them really well. And then I would throw a huge party. I would rent a big hall and throw a huge party and just invite all of my friends that I've made over the years and just fly everybody in and make a big deal out of it. And then I would get a really nice recreational vehicle. I would just purchase that. Then I would purchase a huge piece of land and let one of my friends go up and just oversee it for a year while I did some traveling in the recreational vehicle. And then in a year I would come back and just invite anybody to come and live up on the land that wanted to. And I personally would just take in all the animals that I could handle. I mean, just build, like, houses for them and just take them all in. And that's what I would do.
Wow, you really have thought it out, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
Now, what about the people you would invite? You said friends of yours to come living on the land?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, what would you do? You give them a piece of the land they could build their house, or would you build the houses for them?
No, they could, we would all sort of think about how we would do housing, but the idea would be, a lot of people I know are teachers. Either they're certified teachers or they are really good teachers, and the other thing would be, if possible, to just start a small school. And go to
Hannibal, Missouri, for example. We wanted to see where Sam Clemens, Mark Twain, mm-hmm. had written his stuff, and where he got the inspiration for Tom Sawyer and Becky Thatcher, mm-hmm. and the fence that they whitewashed and all that. Then decided, wouldn't it be nice to see Abraham Lincoln's tomb and the house that he lived in before he became president? The one that he left to go to Washington. But you'd see that on maps all over, and you'd decide, hey, that's only 200 miles away. Let's go take a look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think? Do you remember Missouri? Because my son and I took a train trip a couple of years ago. I went out to Albuquerque for a while, and he came with me. And we took the southern route on the train and stopped in New Orleans, and then we went up to Kansas City. But that was the first time that I had ever been through the Deep South, and that was the idea, was to get down there and then come up along the Mississippi, and I was absolutely fascinated with Missouri. I thought it was so incredibly beautiful.
Well, the thing that I noticed about Missouri was that when you're traveling from the west toward the east,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're passing, say you're from Southern California through,
yeah.
and Nevada and New Mexico and Arizona, all that. Not necessarily in that order, but it's all flat country and desert country.
Yeah.
And even Kansas is pretty flat.
Oh, Kansas is as flat as an island.
So you cross Kansas and you come into Missouri, and for the first time it began to look like New England, because
mm-hmm.
it was hilly country.
It's all rolling hills.
Yeah, and so it starts to look more like home. So I like Missouri on that basis.
Oh, Missouri is an absolutely beautiful state. You really
hung up on Missouri, aren't you, Deb?
Oh, I really am. You know, that's actually one of the places that I would consider living. I mean, I was sort of surprised because I'm not really that familiar with the Midwest. I've been out to California and spent a lot of time in the Southwest and all up and down the East Coast, but the Heartland, that was my first time really going through there and being able to see it, and I was absolutely enchanted with Missouri.
Yeah, there are lots of parts of the United States that are really quite intriguing. One part that I liked was western Montana in the Rockies.
Oh, I haven't been out there.
Yeah, land of the big sky. That's beautiful country.
Yeah.
We spent a couple of nights in Cody, Wyoming, which I thought was right in the foothills of the what is the national park?
Was it the Wyoming?
Isn't that awful? I forgot.
Yellowstone?
Yeah, Yellowstone. It's right near Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a couple of interesting museums there. Well, it was named after Buffalo Bill Cody.
Right.
And anyway, they have... that was an interesting city. A town. It looks a lot like the town I lived in, at least when I was there. It's a long time ago. Maybe it's changed a whole lot. It was very small, except the scenery was so much different because, again, it was in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains right near Yellowstone National Park. And then you go through Yellowstone. That's when you come out on the Montana side, then head northwest.
I see.
Up through the Rocky Mountains. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot to see. I hope you get a chance to do it, whether you win the lottery or not.
Well, I think I will. I think I ultimately will. Don't you love the names out there, though? I mean, it was so exciting to be on the train, and at 6:15 in the morning, the whistle goes off, and they're announcing Dodge City. I mean, just like on the westerns, you know, and you're actually there. I just found that so thrilling.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. The names are interesting,
yeah.
but the whole country is fascinating. I think more and more people should just, if they can. A lot of people can't get away for any great length of time, but if you can get out for even a month, just hop in the car and take off.
Sure.
I would rather do it in a car, I think, than a recreational vehicle, only because it's easier to maneuver and you get into cities more.
Right.
And it's more comfortable staying at a hotel.
That's a good,
or a motel along the way, rather than living off the recreational vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll probably actually end up doing it in a small pickup truck.
Well, that's okay. That sounds like Ernest Hemingway. Did you ever read his book, Travels with Charlie?
No, I haven't read that one.
Yeah, that came out some time ago, but Charlie was his dog, and he got a pickup truck.
Okay, I should do
and
that.
And he put a little... kind of a trailer thing on the back of the pickup truck,
mm-hmm.
where he could do his writing, and that took his typewriter along,
yeah.
And then wrote about the things that he had seen. He just took off and went with Charlie, and he wanted to discover America and talk with people and see what was going on.
Yeah.
It's an interesting book. It was published, you know, so long ago that maybe if you read it now, maybe it's out of date. I'm not sure. But
book writing is never out of date.
Well. No, but his observations on what he'd seen maybe then don't exist now. I'm not sure. I know that I love the book. I thought it was great.
Oh, I shall read it because I like Hemingway very much. I like his style. It's very direct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's.
Good
let's
luck
hope
to you,
we
Deborah.
Both win the lottery.
Okay, if you win it, let me know. Okay.
Okay, I will.
Okay, take care.
I'll invite you to the party.
Hey, I'm ready.
Okay.
Bye bye now.
Good night.
Birthplace of the Navy, and Marblehead is where the first Navy ship was built.
What did I say? The birthplace of what? Did I not say the Navy?
Yeah.
I did say, I see. Now say that again. Beverly
is the birthplace of the organization, the U.S. Navy.
Yeah.
And Marblehead is the place where the first naval ship was built and commissioned.
Oh, I see.
And
okay.
I guess that's the lowdown, and so therefore they both sort of battle back and forth over who gets that claim to fame.
Okay.
You know?
No, because I live in that area.
Yeah,
in the that general area too, and I've been hearing this argument go on. Although I don't hear it quite as wildly as in the past few years or so. Maybe it's simmered down just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you drive into Beverly, across the bridge there's a giant sign that says Welcome to Beverly, birthplace of the American Navy.
Oh, that's right too. That's on Bridge Street, I think. Is it? Yeah, you're heading north.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that they do that to rankle the folks in
yeah, I think they do that just to get their goat.
Okay. hey, good luck. You went. How late do you work tonight? You were there till
I'll
part?
Be out at 9:00 in the morning tomorrow.
Oh, that's a long night.
Yeah. Well,
hey.
it's longer than your night, but but it's not too bad.
Do you get a chance to read or do other things?
I do so much reading. It's unbelievable. I've read more since I've worked
a stringer for the Lawrence Eagle Tribune, also the Salem News, that she covered local events.
Yeah.
And then she got to be the State House reporter for the Lawrence Eagle Tribune, and she worked out of the State House covering State House news for the paper, and then after that eventually went to the Boston Herald. Because but she did. She worked for them for quite some time.
Because my landlord in the building that I live in used to work at the Tribune, and he knew your wife, so that's why.
Oh, really? What kind of work did he do there?
He was a sports reporter.
No kidding.
Yeah.
What was his name? What
Mike
is his
Smith.
Name? Pardon me?
Mike Smith.
Mike Smith. I've seen that byline. Is he still in the newspaper business?
He works now for the union leader in New Hampshire a little bit, and for a couple of small-town newspapers around here.
Oh, that's freelance stuff then, primarily,
yeah.
Is that it? Oh, that's interesting. Now and he's your landlord.
Yeah, believe it or not.
This is one of the few newspaper people who's risen to the point where he can own property. Because usually they don't pay you enough to do much of that kind of stuff.
Well,
but that's good.
He actually owns a video store, too, in this town.
What town are you in?
Hampstead.
Oh, Hampstead. Okay. You're in the... I'm trying to think. Hampstead is where exactly?
It's just north of Haverhill, Mass.
Oh, okay. Near Plastow in that area?
Yeah, the exact area.
Okay.
111.
Okay. I got you. Hey, thanks very much for the call, Rick. I really appreciate your comments, and I appreciate you taking the time to call.
Okay.
And my best to Mike Smith.
I couldn't sleep, so I thought I'd call.
I'm glad you did.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Okay,
yeah,
bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, let's go. Eileen in Quincy. Hello, Eileen.
How are you, handsome?
Just so handsome I can't say. Hold on a minute. Well, I look in the mirror. Oh, I'm gorgeous.
Are you behaving yourself?
Yeah, and I'm not proud of it. What about you? You behaving yourself?
No, I hope not.
Oh, I'm glad. You're my kind of woman, fella. Oh, that sounds awful.
Yeah, turn your head and cough. But anyway, you were talking tonight about
I'm just going to lean back here, and I'm not even going to try to help you out. Let's see if you can come up with whatever.
Oh, you're just going to let me drown.
Yeah, I'm right back here. Just when you come up with it, speak loudly so I can hear you back in the teen canteen, okay, Eileen?
On your stupid game, yeah.
The dumb birthday game.
Yes.
Okay, see, I will help you out.
Okay.
Okay. Yes?
You were asking the age of Tommy Sands.
Tommy said yes.
Did you know that his son is the one that's the one of the leading broadcasters on the O.J. Simpson trial?
I did not know that. I had no idea. Tell me about that.
He's a lawyer.
Yeah.
And he's a broadcaster.
Really?
Yes. And he's a handsome kid. You see him? I don't know which channel he's on, but he's. And he doesn't go by the name of Sands. He's got it must be his mother's name.
Isn't that interesting? Maybe somebody listening knows it, knows the story exactly and can tell us his name and what network.
That would broadcast help.
Him. No, but because his father, I mean Tommy Sands, was a good-looking guy also.
Yes, and then when you hear it, you're going to say, oh yeah, and he looks like his father.
Yeah.
He's about. I'd say that he's about in his late 30s. He's a nice-looking kid. He's very articulate. He doesn't come in with any you'd know he was a lawyer, but he doesn't come in with any law credentials when he's speaking. He comes in mostly with,
mostly as a reporter, you mean, and not as a lawyer, yeah.
But he's always on.
Hmm. We'll have to find out. That's interesting, though. I had no idea about that.
Yeah. I was surprised.
So, now, would his mother be Nancy Sinatra?
No. I don't think Nancy Sinatra ever had any children.
I guess maybe she didn't. I don't recall any, yeah. But I was just thinking, because Tommy Sands was married to her.
Yes.
But then again, maybe, divorced and they married somebody else who's the father of this fellow you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, I'll bet you there's somebody... In fact, all the lines seem to be lit up. I just have a feeling.
Really?
Yeah, somebody probably knows that, and we'll probably get an answer.
But when you see him the next time, you're going to say, oh, yeah.
That's Tommy Sands' son.
He seems like a really, really nice kid.
Yeah, I think Tommy Sands himself appeared to be a decent guy. He was nice looking and gentle and all that kind of stuff. He didn't come on like a fathead or anything.
Oh, no. This kid is a really nice kid.
We're going to unravel this mystery, Eileen, and when we do, we're going to credit it to you.
That's all.
Okay.
And we're going to win the lottery next week, too.
That's right, too. Win a whole lot. That's right. We're going to start colleges, and we're going to go on trips. You're going to win it, and you'll keep the money yourself, and you won't even share it with me.
And I'll meet you down at Chelsea Beach.
Okay. At Chelsea Beach? I didn't know there was such a thing.
There is.
At Chelsea Beach.
Yep.
There's Chelsea Creek.
That's it.
Oh, son of a gun. I've been calling it by the wrong name all these years.
Okay, somebody will call in and tell you.
Yes, I'm sure they will. We'll check them out.
Okay.
Thanks, Eileen.
Okay.
Bye-bye, dear. Okay, Kevin in Dorchester. Hi, Kevin.
Oh, hello, Dor.
Hello. Hello, Kevin.
Hey.
Hey.
You just caught me with a mouthful of Chinese food.
Oh, I envy you. That's the kind of stuff I'd like to have right this very, very moment. You want to describe what you're eating so that we can all share it in it vicariously?
Well, you may laugh. I'm eating a poo-poo platter.
Oh, no, I know. The name sounds funny, but it's good stuff. No,
right.
That's nice, the
right.
poo-poo platter.
Party, and I have good news and bad news.
Okay.
The good news is I was working up at a summer camp all summer long for the past 9 weeks, and I actually got sensation up in Maine. You still there?
Yeah, no, I am. Yeah, no, I'm trying to think of where in Maine were you?
I was in West Pullman on Thompson Lake.
Okay, that sounds like it's a fairly good distance up, is it?
Yeah, it's not too far from the Canadian border, in fact.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right. Well, it's about maybe 5 hours, but still, that's, you know, it's about a few hours away from Boston, about 3-4 hours away. But sometimes when I'm in out and low, I can't get your station sometimes.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Now we get to Indiana, we get to Ohio, Michigan. I mean, very easily,
right.
West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Virginia, all that.
Yeah.
And sometimes we can't get to the Cape.
Right. I'm on the Cape sometimes.
Yeah, or Western Massachusetts. Sometimes we don't get it.
Yeah.
That's a technical thing, and I never understood that. But
there
may be like in the western part of the state, maybe the Berkshire Mountains get in the way or something.
Right.
I don't know. We don't get down to south that far. Like even Fall River and stuff, New Bedford. We don't pound in there either.
Right.
But we pound into Columbus, Ohio. I can't figure it.
Yeah. Now the good thing is, as I said, I was working with children all summer, and I was able to catch your program. The bad thing is, I was up for 16 hours a day with the children because they have to be entertained.
Hmm.
Sometimes I wouldn't be able to go to sleep, and you kept me up all night long.
Oh, that bad news for you, but that's kind of nice news for me.
Exactly.
I appreciate that very much, Kevin.
But I've been a long, long time listener. I just got back in today, and I'm surprised I'm still awake.
No, are you still working with kids?
Well, I will again next summer. Right now, I'm about to open up a little variety store of my own.
Oh, really? Good.
Yeah.
Well, good luck to you. I hope you're tremendously successful.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you'll have two variety stores, and they'll get bigger, and then you'll have a whole chain.
Well, I don't like to indulge in, you know, too much money. I don't want to be too rich just to not have enough.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to get too greedy. But, hey, who knows?
No, I hope you're very successful, and you sound like a nice guy, and I appreciate the call, Kevin. Thanks a
million. Thanks a lot, Norm.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, how about, let's see, who we got? We got George in Brookline. Hi, George. You're on WBC.
Hello. Did you come from the west end of Boston at one time?
No, I didn't. I grew up in Everett and then in Everett and Chelsea.
Were you born in Boston?
I was born in Boston, yes, at the Lying-In Hospital.
Yes.
Did you remember?
I know a man that took your mother to the hospital when you were born.
Are you kidding?
He's passed on now.
Took my mother to the hospital?
Yes.
To the Lying-In Hospital where I was born?
Yes. I don't know the name of the hospital. You're telling me.
Yeah.
Because I was born there myself.
Were you?
Yeah, but he took your mother to the hospital.
No kidding.
He told me that later years. He's older than I am. He's a mechanic.
Well, Well, how old can he be? Because I'm not a kid.
Well, he's dead now. He's been gone.
I see. Okay, because I'm not a kid, so he'd have to have been around.
He used to live up in the Beacon Hill area.
Yeah. How did that come about? Did he tell you?
He used to work for me. He worked for me for a few years.
What kind of work did you do?
I had a service station and parking lot.
Oh, I see.
And he is a mechanic.
Oh, was that in Boston?
Yeah.
Can you tell me his name?
Harry Cohn.
Oh, he's a cousin.
A cousin of yours.
He was a cousin. Silverman was his mother's name. Wasn't he? He was from the Silverman family. His name, Harry Cohn. And, I know him. Yeah, and did he have a shop of his own there for a while also?
Yes, he did.
That's my cousin. Oh, he drove.
Oh, I didn't know he related to you.
No, that's obviously.
One time we were talking, he told me, he says, he took your mother to the hospital.
She was Rose Nathan.
Probably the only few guys that had a car then.
No, that's right, because when I was growing up, we looked for neighbors to take us to Revere Beach in the summertime. We didn't have a car most of the time. Harry Cohn, son of a gun, I hadn't thought about him for many years.
He came from the West End originally.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, he was a very gentle, lovely man. I liked him a lot.
He was. Harry was a nice guy.
Yeah.
I know him since I was a kid. I knew him when I was a kid, and I'm 76 now.
Yeah, well, you're not that much. Well, I'm a little bit younger than you, but not a whole lot. But he was. Isn't that interesting? It's funny you should say that. No wonder he drove my mother to the hospital. It's her cousin.
He's got
too.
A son who lives in Chicago, I think.
Yeah, I've kind of lost track of the family.
His son's an engineer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Son of a. Now that was on the. My father's side of the family, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thanks a lot for the information. That's interesting, George. I didn't know that.
Okay.
You're okay. Take care. Yeah, bye-bye. Okay. It's Marianne and Newton. Hello, Marianne.
Well, hello, Norm. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Hey, I'm glad you called. I'm delighted.
I'm never up at this hour. This is the first time in my life I've been up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, see how much you've missed.
See, I'm in the wrong house. Instead of being in my own house, I'm at my daughter's home in Newton all by myself, and it's big and scary here.
Oh,
so I woke up at 3 o'clock thinking it was 5 o'clock. So here I am. But I wanted to clear up this mystery.
Okay.
Jim Moray, who's on CNN and covers O.J. every day, is the son of Bobby Darin.
Okay, let me write that down. Jim, how do you
Moray,
know?
Moray, I think it's MORRETT or MORET. Like Moray.
MORET.
Yeah.
And he's on CNN?
Every single day, and he covers the OJ thing every day, and you see him in the evening, and he's very popular, and he's the spitting image of his father, Bobby Darin. And I read that.
Oh, not Bobby. Well, no, we're talking about Sands.
No, it's not his son. She's mixed up. It's Bobby Darin's son.
Oh, Bobby Darin's son.
It was in the old I column. Well, I forget what they call it now, but.
Oh, you mean my wife's column?
I mean, but it wasn't in her column. It's the Now column. What do they call it now?
Oh, right now it's called. Isn't that awful?
I forget. Anyway, it's no fun anyway. But that's the column that I saw it in.
Oh, okay. And that's
Bobby
Darin's
son. And he's the spitting image of him. He's so handsome. And when you see him, you'll just say, oh, my God, how did I not know that? Do you watch CNN?
Yes, I do. I watch it a lot.
And he's on, like, as soon as it comes on, he says, Jim Moray here in, Atlanta, blah, blah, blah. And he's just gorgeous.
I will have to look at that.
You have to. He's a spitting image of him. And I remember those days in the 50s when I loved Bobby Darin.
Yeah. Oh, the shark cast. That was one of the first songs he recorded.
Right. Exactly. He looked just
Well, that was one of his big tunes when he decided he adored Frank Sinatra and wanted to do a Sinatra cut. But before that, he did stuff like, did he do Cement Mixer, Putty Putty?
Putty remember? Putty.
Or Drip Drip, or some really kind of awful song.
I just remember it. I loved
it. And then he went on. Yeah, he went on that Sinatra kick, and I thought he was great. It's kind of interesting about him. He had open heart surgery, and died soon after.
Oh, I didn't know.
And the reason that Bobby Darin's kind of close to my thoughts is I had open heart surgery. Also, about that same time, fortunately for me, everything worked out great, and I'm in good health and all. But my mother, sent a card to Bob. Now, she never used to do this. This is the mother who was delivered, who was driven to the hospital by my cousin Harry that we just talked about.
In a cab.
Yeah, you know, whatever it was, yeah. And anyway, she sent a card to him because here's her son had the same kind of surgery, and she felt a great, she commiserated with him a great deal. She felt a great warmth toward him. Hmm. Anyway, and she felt so badly when he died soon after that. I don't know what he had two open heart surgery operations or one, but he died soon after.
But you'll have to watch him, and as soon as you see him and you look at his eyes, you'll know it's Bobby
Darin's
son.
I'll say, hey, that's Bobby Darin's son, Jim Murray.
That's who it is.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to me.
Thanks for telling us. I appreciate it.
Have a great night. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Okay. That's my friend Mary Ann. Okay, we have news coming up. It's a little late to take a call right this second until after the news. But I hope you guys will hang in there, and after the news, we'll take some calls, and we'll be around for another 20 minutes or so after that. And I'll tell you the number again, 254-1030 in the area code 617. And I'll tell you the Red Sox lost their second game in a row. First time in 5 weeks they've lost two in a row, which doesn't sound like the old Red Sox. They're still doing great. Oakland 11-4 over the Red Sox. Canseco did not hit a home run. He hit a home run in five previous games. It's an incredible team anyway. And somebody said you can't win them all. I forget who it was who said that. Anyway, 254-1030, if I can talk to you during the last 10, 15, 20 minutes of the program, I'd love to do that. Okay, a little bit of music. Should we do that? That's nice, yeah.
To the 50,000 watt clear channel.
Needed upgrading again. My needs had outgrown my upgrade. My CD-ROM wouldn't let me switch from one application to another. When I logged into my video and multimedia capability, it became obvious I needed a speedier CPU. My Pentium processor, when logging into my server, clearly was demanding a higher-grade Pentium technology. My mouse, 2.0, was not equipped with IntelliPoint software, and when that happens, your cursor slows down, and when you're near the target, it never knows when you're about to double-click. And you know what happens next? Sure enough, your hard drive turns to a floppy, and don't you hate it when that happens? Yes, sir, Mr. Gates, this is the sort of stuff I have to deal with day in and day out, and I guess I should thank you for helping to create this ergonomically designed keyboard, helping my tiny little fingers glide across all these buttons with simple keystrokes to transfer these words to my debt. This is GaryLapierre.com, WB, never mind.
Episode 2 complete. Nice to hear the late, great Gary Lapierre there at the end. For new listeners, that was a great example of Norm's show. For those who remember Norm, I hope it made you smile and laugh, especially that call from Robert and Everett. Please like, subscribe, and share. Hit the bell so you get notifications when the next big show airs. And check the description box for more info. Thank you just so darn much for listening, closing the vault, and riding the radio waves home. For the almost good-looking Norm Nathan person, I'm Tony Nesbitt.